Hey. My name is Santuti. Yeah. And yes, yeah, it's good to just see people coming here to the Buddhist Center on a Friday night. And I was just thinking earlier, you know, it's like this path that we start. Becoming a Buddhist, or we've been a Buddhist for, you know, many years. Is the path about just making growth on a daily basis, if you can. In a sense, we're trying to, you know, build something. But we're not building anything worldly, but we're building something from within. And you know, the Buddha does talk about the qualities of the mind that we build as human beings, you know, qualities like kindness, generosity, learning how to meditate, just also coming to a Buddha center and just learning teachings from different teachers, and trying to understand what this is all about and working towards it. And that's all it is. If we think about it, life is not very difficult. You know, we have to get up in the morning and we do what we've got to do. But in a sense, we have this, like, this Buddhist teaching to insert into our lives to make it, just to make it a little bit better, or to try to find some peace, or in a sense work to, you know, the goal of, like, enlightenment. You know that very reason why, you know, monks and lay people, I think one of the reasons why is to become enlightened. And I think after a while we don't really talk about it as much as monks, because it's something which is, like, really far away from the human mind or from human experience. And and you have to be, I think, like, a very skilled practitioner in terms of how deep you go in your meditation, and obviously your virtue and your understanding of the Dhamma. But you know, I've been a monk for 15 years, I don't really talk about it that much, because it's something which is very hard to attain. But I think each and every one of us sort of understands that as well. But the reason why we're here is to work towards it, and that's all we can do. Step by step, work towards, like, the higher goals of Buddhism. And but I always felt as a practitioner that as you're doing the practice, whether you started, you know, the Buddha said, like, there's happiness at the beginning, happiness in the middle, and happiness in the end. And I thought about that, and that's kind of like happiness at the end. Yeah, that's probably like the enlightenment experiences. You know, you become an arahant. You know the deep dhammas. You understand the mind. You know, that's like happiness at the end. And then you have like happiness in the middle. That's sort of like the monks. You know, we've been practicing for a long time. That's sort of like happiness in the middle. So you sort of passed the beginning stage, and now you're, like, into the middle stage, yeah? And you can find, like, a happiness that comes from, like, the middle stage. And then you talk about the happiness, you know, happiness, like, in the middle stage is, like, you've been a Buddhist for many years, and you understand the happiness that generosity can give you. And you appreciate, you know, the kind people in your life. You dedicated your time to the meditation practice, and you can see how a calm, peaceful mind can benefit you. And that's sort of like the happiness in the middle. And these happinesses, like in anything, keeps you going until, you know, the end of the path. And then you talk about, like, the happiness, at the beginning. It's like, you know, people bright-eyed coming to Buddhism, And they can find like a certain happiness that you get from just making that change in your life. And like a good example is when it's like there's this person living with us, and you could sort of say that he made the changes in his life to be able to, you know, fix it, because, you know, he had problems and things like that. And you could sort of tell that in making that change to become a Buddhist, he got some sort of happiness from it. Yeah? And that's sort of like, you know, the happiness you get, like at the beginning of your path, of the path. And I think that happiness comes from just making a change in one's life. And, you know, making that change, just adding a little bit of more of the meditation practice into your daily life. Like, you know, trying to keep the five precepts, stay off the alcohol, stay off the drugs, you know, things like that. And just changing your attitude towards how you treat people. And this is what this is what this person did, and I could see the change in him, yeah. And that's sort of like, you know, wherever you're on this path, you can find some sort of benefit from it. And then I remember talking to his mother, and his mother said, you know, finally, I get my son back. Finally, I get my son back. I've lost my son for so many years due to, you know, just unskillful acts and an unskillful attitude. And because he came across, you know, just a different philosophy of a different way of looking at life, she was able to get her son back. And what she meant was, you know, he fixed his life. And he started to understand what was important. And that's when, you know, a bit of wisdom arises, understands that, you know, family is important at this particular time in his, you know, Buddhist training. So, yeah. And I was like just thinking a little, I was just thinking before, you know, in the monastery, I like to build things. Yeah, I like to take out the tape measure. You know, you measure up, you measure up, and then you make the cut. And you know, you try to get things right. You do things carefully, and then you just try to do different things. You do a bit of tiling here, do a bit of roofing, a bit of painting. And I think, like, you know, it's like we're trying to like build something for, like, what I'm doing now is building something for the monks to stay in. Yeah. And this idea of like building something is also applies to your spiritual life. Yeah. It's not like just coming here and listening to a couple of Dhamma talks and then you know everything. It doesn't work. It's like building is a practical thing, and I think the spiritual path, in a sense, is also a very like practical thing as well. And with building, you can't build something overnight. It takes time. And you know the way monks do things. We just work in the mornings. So that's like a couple of hours a day. So when we build things, it takes a long, long time. But it's sort of the same with the you know, the spiritual practice. Yeah, it doesn't happen very quickly. It doesn't happen very quickly. It's like, you know, each and every day, we're just trying to do that little bit extra to become better people. Yeah. just become better people and have a little bit of, you know, that trust in just having that courage to just to be better people and see what kind of effect it has on your mind and the, you know, and the people around you. And yeah, and I sort of could, you know, I could sort of see that with myself when I was just coming into Buddhism. I was a young man. I used to, you know, like going out, and you know, you're rebellious. You don't really, you know, listen to your mom. You go out and have a lot of fun, and whatever your mom tells you to do, you don't listen to her. So you end up upsetting her. And that's before I became, you know, became a Buddhist. And I didn't really understand how to... I knew how to treat other people, but for some reason when it came to, like, treating, like, your mother or father, it was sort of something that you can treat them like it didn't really matter. So if you were to upset them, that was okay with you. And you know, I didn't know this until I decided to turn to Buddhism. And then I became a Buddhist, and I started to come to the center. I learned a few things, and then I started to, you know, treat my mum like properly. Like, you care for her, you respect her, you look after her. And that's what I've been doing over the years. And I could see the, you know, the positive effects it has on our relationship. And always, every time I go home, I always have in the back of my mind, how can I help my mother out? And I think like with the spiritual practice, we have to learn how to just reflect on our actions and see how, see what kind of effects they have on the people around us. So for this example, you know, it's like over the years, like many, many years of practicing as a Buddhist and just treating people in the right way, what kind of effect has it had on me and on them? So that's the way you learn. You sort of learn, like, if you treat people right, then you know, good things happen. Yeah, good things happen. And yeah, you know, it's like that's what the Buddha talked about, being virtuous. And Ajahn Brahm talks about that. Ajahn Brahmali, all the people that come here. A big chunk of just living a good life is to be a virtuous person. How we talk to people and how we think about people. I think that's very important. And the Buddha even said in the suttas that you know, the whole of monastic life is having like good companionship, good friends around you. And I was just reflecting on the life that I'm living at the moment in Kelmscott, Dhanayanaram Monastery. And it's only a very small community, but I have with me a good friend, Ajahn Janarato. And just because I was just flicking through the suttas, and because I have to give a sutta class on Sunday, I came across this one, and it made me think about how important just having like good friendship can, you know, give us that mental stability to help us along with the practice. Just surrounding yourself with like goodness is such a, you know, because sometimes, you know, we think we're in this world alone and we need to become enlightened alone, and it becomes very difficult. But we have the support of other people that we're, you know, our friends or the people that we're living with, it just makes life that little bit easier. And just thinking about what the Buddha said, and he said, like, having like good companions in your life, or just surrounding yourselves with good people is the whole, like the whole of the spiritual practice. But then he goes in like deeper and deeper and deeper into it. But you can understand where that comes from, is because in a sense, we're not on this path alone. We're on this path with other people. And it's sort of like easier to get to, in a sense, to a destination with other people than it is by yourself. And then the Buddha would go on and say, you know, the reason why having friendship is like the whole of the spiritual life is because you have like these great teachers, like who can teach us how to you know, develop the mind, do the meditation, so we can actually see the end of the goal. And that's all very well, you know, surrounding yourself with by good people and living like a good life, and it's quite simple. As human beings, we know how to treat one another, and we can just feel the effects of it. If we get upset, or get angry with somebody, you know, how do you feel afterwards? You don't feel too good. So in a sense, we're just learning how to grow in this spiritual life through our own observation and reflection. And you know, a part of this, like the Buddhist practice, is just learning how to be good people. But I think another part of it, which is very important, is to just to add the meditation practice into our lives. Yeah. You know, meditation, I think, is very important. Just because, like I was saying before, just giving yourself that opportunity to just stop. Just stop. It's just really nice just to be able to stop for half an hour or an hour every day. Just being able to just hit the off switch, so you don't have to talk to anybody, you don't have to send any emails, you don't have to do anything. Just being able, I think, to find that place of like stillness and quiet within. Meditation just gives you that time to just get away from everybody. And I think that's a wonderful gift that you can give yourself. And I think, in a sense, you know, people are just too busy, or they find different things which are a lot more important to do than the meditation practice. So at the beginning, I think it's kind of difficult to be able to get that momentum going. So you can actually add the meditation into your life. So that's my little advice, is just try to add a little bit of meditation into your lives every day, and just to see the benefits of stopping for like half an hour. You know, how does that feel? You know. Like I like to call it like de-stressing. Like you don't have to do anything for half an hour. It's like, what a relief. And that's what the meditation offers us on a daily basis. Just being able to just get away from it all. And yeah. So yeah. You know, we're just trying to, it's like you heard about, just, you know, sometimes I was talking to one of my friends who lives in he's a Buddhist monk and he lives in what, Buddha Dhamma? I'm sure you heard about it. The monastery in Sydney, and they got affected by the bushfires. Yeah, and I think it was on the news, and you could see some of the kutis burning, and the kutis are no longer there. So I remember when I was talking to him on the phone, because it was getting to the time where the bushfires were getting quite close, and they were forced to evacuate. So they went down to there was like a Buddhist lodge about 20 k's away from their monastery, and Ajahn Kama, we're good friends, and I lived with him for a long time, and I understand what he's like. And he's like, you know, just trained as a Buddhist monk for many years, and he's not too worried about things, you know. If something goes wrong, it's going to go wrong. So he has that kind of attitude, and I think that's like a good attitude to have. You can't control the world around you, so in a sense, you have to learn how to go with the flow. So, I remember talking to him, and he was saying, "Oh yeah, the fire just veered left of the monastery. I've got a flight to go to America. I'm not worried about it. I'm just going to get on the plane and just go." So that's what he did. He got on the plane. And I'm thinking, oh, you had a look at the map online and the fires were just all around the area. I'm like, you really going to go? You think your monastery is not going to get burnt? But he still went anyways. The fire, he said, the fire's gone off to the left. Everything should be okay. So then, he was on his plane, on the plane, and as he was on the plane, that's when the monastery started to catch a light. And then, so when he landed, he found out about it. And then for a couple of days, I didn't hear much from him, because I thought, oh yeah, he's in America, and I spoke to some of the monks who were staying in the monastery, and they weren't allowed to go back to the monastery until it was safe and clear to do so. And then from that point onwards, you heard stories about what got burnt and what got destroyed. So because Ajahn Kama heard that his monastery got destroyed, he flew back to the monastery. Yeah, he flew back to the monastery. And So the first chance he got to go back, he went back. He went back and he had a look. And you know, nothing. Just like you had a couple of kutis, the monks practiced, that got burnt down. Some of the meditation paths. The kitchen was safe. The Dhamma hall was saved. So a lot of the infrastructure was still left behind. And he was okay with it, you know. I gave him a call, and I asked him, you know, what's going on, and he said, oh, you know, this is happening, and the water pipes doesn't work, but you know, we can fix it. Everything's okay. Yeah, and I thought to myself, it's sort of like when you put yourself in that situation, you can have like two different reactions to what happened. And I thought his like reaction to the situation was, you know, a reaction that that a person who, you know, like a wiser person would have, to forget about what happened. Yes, the fire burnt through the monastery, it affected it, but then what's done is done. So instead, just look onto the future and do what you can to fix it. And I think sort of that attitude of like just letting go of what just happened and just moving on is an attitude that we can sort of add to our lives. And the other attitude that you have is like, oh, my monastery burnt down. Oh, what's going to happen? I'm not in a good situation. And instead of trying to fix the problem and move on, you just dwell on it and hold on to the bad thing that just happened. And I think when it comes to just living life and just learning how to let go, letting go is a skillful, a very helpful quality to have just to be able to, you know, just live a harmonious and a more like mentally stable, stable life. And I sort of like to give the example that I sort of have in the monastery is like, I'm quite close with Janarata, and sometimes we get into arguments. we get into arguments, right? And over, I don't know, it's like, do you want a gas stove or electric stove? kind of thing. Or what kind of solar do you want? It's like, and it's just all about views and opinions. And I think if you were like an onlooker and you would see us arguing, it wouldn't be very inspiring. It's like, they're monks, they're not supposed to be arguing, they're supposed to be good people. But then, if you see afterwards, you know, we don't hold on to anything. We let it go. And then when you look at that, and you go, oh yeah, now that's inspiring. because that's what I've noticed, like, with this idea of letting go. You know, we talk about it in Buddhism all the time, and just watching and just seeing how people practice it. When does it really work? And I think it really works when you get yourself in a situation where you have an argument or something doesn't go right, and you're able to just forget about it. Forget about it and just move on. And just understand that, yeah, you know, we have different views and opinions. Yes, we do have emotions. We do get, if we're unenlightened, we get angry, we get frustrated. But then we understand not to hold on to it and let it go. And then when you can let go, right, you're just like friends again. Yeah? You can live with each other and work. You can live with each other and just work together. Because we're trying to work together to develop the property on Stocker Road. And I think at the moment we have, a pretty good team, and it's working well. But that's a nice thing to see. And then when you this idea of like letting go, and sometimes people get, they sort of like get caught up in their emotions, or they're a bit sad, or whatever, and they just still do not know how to let go of the problem. But when I see that, I don't really know what is happening in that person's mind, but if that person could just put things aside, just learn that skill of letting go, not holding on to things, then life would be just that little bit better. That's what we try to, when we meditate, to let go and not hold on to things. And just living life in general. If you start thinking about what you've done during the day and all the pressures that you have, if you don't have that letting, you don't know where that letting go button is, then you can start to put a lot of pressure on your mind. And, we hear about people beginning, burning out. That's what's happening. And, I think Ajahn Brahm is a pretty good practitioner when it comes to, letting go. He's got all sorts of stuff to worry about. Yeah? I mean, he's got to be, the Buddhist Society of WA, and now he's traveling to Malaysia, and he's living with like a group of monks, and monks complain about other monks and complain about this, and he has to learn how to deal with it. Yeah. And when he goes back to his hut, you know, he has to process everything, and eventually you come to terms with it and you just learn how to just throw it away, just to let it go. And I think a way to sort of like trying to understand this idea of letting go is like life is, we suffer, you know. Why do you want to hold on to this suffering? Just think about it, you know. Someone says something to us or we're having a bad day and we're suffering. We all suffer, right? That's why most of us are here. Because we suffer. What do we suffer from? Maybe we're worried about something. Somebody's upset us. And you can see it becomes a problem when it just stays in us for a long time. Like when I mean staying in us for a long time, like occupying our minds. Not for 10 minutes, but 1 or 2 days. 1 or 2 days. And it gets, 1 or 2 days. And it gets to the point where logically we understand that it's not worth holding on to, but because for some reason we're attached to it, we keep on holding on to that suffering. And that's a terrible place to be. You know? It's a terrible place to be. And I always like tell people is like, notice your mind when it's suffering and notice your mind when it's free from suffering. And where would you rather be? And if you understand a mind which is free from suffering, that's where you go back to more and more and more. Because when a mind is suffering, it's a terrible place to be. You're creating a world. You are creating a world of turmoil for yourself. Literally, you are creating a world. Maybe some people, you know, they push that button, but the rest of it is on you. So notice that, yeah? And the more you notice that this is not a place that you don't want to be, then you won't, the more you stay away from it. That's how, it's like you don't want to be there, you stay away from it. It's just like some of the people that we meet in life. And, you know, for some reason we don't gel or something like that. So you sort of, the mind will just stay away from them. And in the same way, we look at our own, like, just the hardship that we create in our own minds. We don't like it, so we try to do what we can to stay away from it. And I think a way to notice how much harm it does to your mental health, then you will stay away from it. And you just notice your mind when it's like free from that. It's like your mind's a little bit clear. It's living in the present moment. It becomes happy easily. Yeah, you know that place in your mind. And you notice it. I always tell people notice it because you can always, in a sense, go back to it. So just notice the good part of your mind. So where would you rather be? You know, that's what I sort of do for myself. Like, that's what we do for ourselves as monks, or as, you know, practitioners, meditators. We look at our own minds and trying to learn from it. And that's one of the main, I think one of the main things that I learned about my own mind is that in a sense we have to know our potential, the potential of our own mind, and we have to do things to be able to see it. And I think a way of being able to do that is through, you know, the meditation practice. And just being able to just see what the mind can offer you and learn from that. Just living in monastery and just doing a little bit of teaching now. It's not the easiest thing in the world. But I just remember trying to describe to somebody, you know, just the, you know, we're trying to, like, at, you know, Buddhism, in a sense, is quite simple. And we're just trying to explain to people what it's like to give without expecting anything in return. And I sort of gave the example of we're building up the Stocker Roadside, right? Building up the Stocker Roadside, and supporters, a new supporter, he lives down the road from us, and he's got a tractor. Yeah, he's got a tractor. He's got a tractor, but it has like a bucket. That's a scoop. So he dug a trench for us. He dug a trench from the power pole all the way to the stables. And he did it with his small tractor. And he did it for, you know, he did it out of the, you know, he just gave, expecting nothing in return. So, and what he did was he dug the trench, right? He dug the trench. It took him a couple of days. It's quite a long trench, I think about 70, 80 meters. And then once he dug the trench, then it was time for the monks to come in to help out. So we sort of laid the conduit. We laid the conduit and the electric cable. Yeah. So we helped out on that, and then that took us like a couple of days. And then we got the plumber. He came in as well a couple of days later, and we helped him put out the water line. Yeah, put out the water line, and then we covered it up. And then when you look at it right now, it looks like nothing has ever been done. And when you think about that, that's sort of like giving without expecting anything in return. And I think that's the one of the nice things in life is what we get taught as a Buddhist is to just give freely without expecting anything in return. And in a sense, you know, when I was doing this earlier in my life, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. And I remember Ajahn Brahm was trying to teach his monks that you do good and then reflect on it. Do good and think about it. And I'm like, okay, I've done good. But then I thought about it, but I wasn't getting like much happiness or joy from it. And that's what he would say, because he would say, you got to learn and find ways to generate a bit of happiness and joy in your life. Because, you know, I know some of you may understand that living in a monastery can be, you know, plain and simple. So we have to use these tricks to sort of like brighten up the mind. And he would say that, and I would hear that at a very young age as a monk, and I was like, oh, that doesn't work. So I was like, do all this service in the monastery, you know, do this, do that. And, you know, just giving, I don't really expect anything in return, you know. And I was like, you know, I was trying to get, like, Ajahn Brahm said, reflect on it. And then you get some happiness from it. And there's sort of like two lessons here, you know. And but then for some reason, these like teachings, they stick in your mind. And then I remember when I was in Sydney, and I was just, you know, just an afternoon in a monastery, you've done your meditation, You don't really talk to the monks anymore because you live with them, and then after a while you got nothing there to say. That's what happens. But then there's just like walking around, and then I just remember the Ajahn, this teaching from Ajahn Brahm. I sort of like just reflect on the good that you've done, and then that should bring you happiness. And then I sort of like walking around and just having a look at the work that I've done for the place. And then all of a sudden, like, this happiness, you know, start to arise within my, you know, my mind and whatever. And so, yeah, the lesson that I learned is, you know, what Ajahn Brahm said was true, that you do get happiness from reflecting on the good that you have done. And the other lesson that I learned is this, like, this Buddhist teaching, you know, this Dhamma that you get taught by wise people, it doesn't always arise when you want it to. It sort of like arise when it wants to. So this is what happened in my case. And I think it's like, yeah, a lot of us, you know, we do a lot of work for the BSWA, and we help out and things like that. And sometimes we may think, oh, it's not actually working. It's not bringing us, like, we reflect on it. It's not bringing us any happiness. But but don't lose any hope. Don't lose all hope. But because eventually one day, I think you'll just look back and just see what you've done. Whether it's, I don't know, writing an email for Ajahn Brahm. I think with that you get instant happiness. Oh, yes, I've done something for Ajahn Brahm. Then if you think about it, you get more happiness afterwards. But yeah, you know, things like that. It's like these little tricks and tips that we get, you know, we get taught as monks to be able to, you know, just add into our meditation practice. And I always say, you know, it's like, to me, like, yes, you have the learning side of the Buddhist path, but I think it's also very like a practical path. You have to, like, building something, you have to put in the time. You actually have to do something, put in the effort, and then after 30 years, you get Bodhinyana Monastery. After 15, 20 years, you get Dhammasara. You know, it doesn't happen like straight away. And the same with the mind. Just building up the spiritual qualities of the mind. Very simple qualities, you know. It's like, I think, like, happiness, love, kindness, they're very simple things. But it's like, how would you say, how much love can you give to this world? A great amount or a little amount? And that's all we're doing. We're just building that little amount into a greater amount. How much kindness can we give to the people around us? Obviously we start and it's little, but then it grows and becomes like a great amount of kindness. And that's all it is, I think, you know. That's all it is. And then just the happiness and the well-being that you just like that you get from this path is something that tells you that it's actually working. So that's why you continue. So you continue to be a monk, you continue to be a Buddhist, because you can understand and see that, you know, these things are making positive changes in your life. And yeah, you know, the enlightenment, the deep meditations, like, you know, eventually they'll happen. Eventually they'll happen. So you got to put in the time and see what happens. Alright, I think I'll end there. So this is any questions from the floor?
Questions from the floor?
Everybody's getting ready for Christmas. Because Christmas is next week. Okay. So there's from the United States. Can you give us some tips for letting go in meditation? I think meditation is something that you get tips and tricks from your teachers, but at the end of the day, you have to just sit down and just give yourself that time to observe your own mind. And I think, like I said earlier, you start to understand what suffering is, and when you let go of suffering, like during your meditation practice, I think that's where you learn. It's like, what is the mind like when it's free of suffering? It's like peaceful, it's clear. And then when a difficulty comes up within your mind, you sort of like, okay, I don't want to be here. So what do I have to do not to be here? I have to learn how to let go. So that's how you start to learn how to let go. You know what's good for your mind and you know what isn't. Yeah. Okay. I always try to make the righteous actions and be kind to others. I always analyze every action I make. I know whatever I do, whether good or bad, will return to me. I feel the whole process makes me lose the genuineness of my actions and behavior as I calculate everything I do. How can I make good karma and be genuine at the same time? Yeah, I think one of the best advice I ever got from like a meditation master is when you're doing the practice, you're trying to do it naturally. And that's how, I think that's the approach that you try to take when it comes to just changing your life to become a better person, is coming from a place where you do things naturally and you're being yourself, and understand that you're going to make mistakes along the way. And just understanding that you're not perfect and that you're trying, I think that's a good step in the right direction. And then I think it's just like the habits that we have as human beings. After a while, you'll be able to just change those unwholesome habits into good ones. And then over time, 10, 15 years, you see a huge change in your person. Yeah. How does one pick up on narcissistic abuse and to know when the benefits of doubt and compassion is really not a wise thing to give? Thank you. Yeah, so I always like to, sometimes I always get this idea that being a Buddhist, we have to be like super nice, super kind to everybody that we meet in our lives. You come across the Metta Sutta, and the Metta Sutta says that it's just got to be kind to everybody. And yeah, that's fine, if you're like enlightened or have a well-trained mind, yes, it's a lot easier for you to be kind to everybody and love everybody that you come across. But sometimes in life we do come across like difficult people. And I remember just reading, I think in the Dhammapada or something like that, the Buddha sort of advised us that not to spend time with people who are not good for us. It's not those exact words, but that's what he meant. And just to avoid like dangerous situations, dangerous people are not good for you. And then when I read that, I thought, okay, so as the Buddhist, you don't have to be nice and to everybody. So the Buddha is saying something different now. And I think that's also applies in life. Sometimes it is true. We're not all enlightened. We don't always get along with people. And sometimes people are more, just a little bit more toxic and, toxic. Not good for your health. So I think the wiser thing is to just stay away. You don't have to make any bad karma by attacking them. You probably think bad about them already, but you don't have to make any more bad karma and just avoid them. Yeah. I think just avoiding them, just like getting away from the situation can bring some sort of relief to your mind. Okay.
Pay respects.